Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Wave Podcast. We're back, finally, a little bit delayed, but we are talking about the finale of season one, or maybe the series of The Acolyte, which is the Star Wars, the newest Star Wars show on Disney Plus. I am one of your hosts. My name is Darian Scalamoni. Joining me, as always, is Mark Iacobino.
What's up, Darian? Hello, everyone.
We've been talking about the show for 8 weeks now.
I think this is the first Star Wars show we got through the entire season without having any technical difficulties.
That's true.
We had Ahsoka. We missed the one episode, so we did it.
We got the full scope, and boy, what a show.
Yeah.
We got the full scope for. For the people who have never watched us before, there is a majority of people that don't like the show. We happen to fall in the majority, but I know there are people in the vocal minority that do enjoy the show. Mm-hmm. But we're obviously going to wrap up our thoughts on the last episode, the season as a whole, the series question mark as a whole, and two major reveals that we waited on, and they were given about 45 seconds of screen time and were the biggest moments of the season. Mm-hmm. And it all could be for a waste. So we can get into that.
Sure.
But let's start with the series as a whole and the direction they decided to go in. We've talked about this a little bit. we get essentially the flip that we were waiting on the whole time, that was very much sort of just openly projected to the audience for a very long time. And I talked about, I think it was in our episode, episode 5 review, I was talking about how I was worried that they might be dumbing down things, and maybe some of the reshoots made them rework some of the writing of this series to make it so predictable for the audience. Yeah. Did you feel that the finale was as predictable as you could have imagined? And was there anything potentially shocking about the finale that you're already shaking your head now?
No, nothing shocking. You alluded to the reveals. I think everyone was expecting a Plagueis reveal, but you even asked me before we started recording, do you think Yoda will be in the show? And I remember saying, I think he will be the last shot of the show, or like the last second they will do a flash of Yoda. And it's exactly what we got. Mm-hmm. Osha may turn. I think we talked about it. I think I said episode 4. I was like, I think they're going to flip sides, and that's an interesting direction they go. They do. They don't execute it well. It's too fast. Osha's, loyalty to Quimir makes no sense based on what he's done. And May has flip-flopped 1,000 times, so we don't even know where she ends up by the end of this season, outside of the fact that she is now mind-wiped, which was very interesting. Mm-hmm. What else was
I will predicted? Say, yeah. I did predict that technically speaking they were the same person.
Yeah,
and you get that reveal, which
but what does it even mean?
It doesn't mean shit,
because they are like two people.
It doesn't mean anything, but the fact that they separated them, mm-hmm, at birth as being this one being, and then they were able to manipulate the birth,
yeah,
creating twins.
Yeah. Vernestra being Quimir's old master, I think we said that episode yeah. 6 with the mm-hmm. whip mark on his back. Yes. And her, like, all of it was, all the writing was on the wall. So nothing about this finale shocked me, surprised me. Last week, I believe you asked me, like, what do you think next week's going to be like? And I said, I think it's going to be very convenient that they all show up in the same place for some reason, and they have the final battle. And this episode opens with that. Osha puts on the mask. She has a vision. She's like, we got to go to Brendok. Okay, we're going to Brendok. And Sol and May have this confrontation in the ship, and she runs away. She lands on Brendok, and Basil for some reason rips out the wires to make Sol crash land on Brendok. So typical Acolyte fashion, just led right into where we needed to be. The plot said we needed to go there, so everything just went there.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a multitude of negatives that we could dive into, which we will a little bit deeper, but I do want to start with a couple of positives in the finale.
Okay.
Just to try to be devil's advocate a little bit.
Love the Acolyte.
I don't love the Acolyte. The fight choreography in this episode is fantastic.
Yes.
And we have discussed multiple times on the pod that one of the standout things of this show has been the fight choreography. Leslie Headland had talked about how she wanted to rival a lot of the fights that were in the prequel trilogy. I don't know if it goes that far. However, I think they are comparable. I think that there could be an argument made that in certain scenes and certain sequences, there are some really, really well done action spots.
Yeah.
On top of that, I was a fan not of the decision making and the writing and the Basil part of it, but the whole chase sequence in the sky through the ring.
Yeah, that was cool.
The stars, I thought was a very cool visual. And there was actually a little bit of tension there, except for the fact that Basil's a little shit rat that just decided to pull wires for no reason.
Yeah.
So those are my positive takeaways. I don't know if you had anything about those two things in particular. Certain moments of the fight, especially the fight between Sol and Chimere, is really, really fantastic. I don't know. The one with Mayanosh is okay, but that's also hard to execute because you have the same actor playing the same character.
Right, right.
But what were your thoughts on the two sequences I at least mentioned?
Yeah, I liked the bridge part of the fight scene between Chimere and Sol, where their lightsabers are kind of popping out of the bridge as they're fighting, and it's kind of just cutting the bridge apart without them like intentionally trying to do it. I thought that was really cool. I think the hand-to-hand stuff has been really interesting so far, with people grabbing at each other's lightsabers, switching hands, changing all of their different grips to kind of use their opponent against, like, their weight against them. I thought all that was really cool. The space scene, yeah, I think visually for me, it was mostly the thing that paid off. It was the $180 million budget showed for a little bit there, which was nice. Other positives, I did like when Osha says, when she sees Mei for the first time, when she gets to Brendok, she does say something along the lines of, I've hated you for what you did for so long, and that's, I've been harboring those feelings, and that's essentially why she couldn't become a Jedi, because she could never rid herself of those feelings. I thought that was very Star Wars-esque. I appreciated that. Again, the build-up to it, the payoff after it, not great, but I think that isolated moment was pretty solid.
Yeah. Let's dive into the two big reveals. You already alluded to them a little bit. I mean, Yoda, there's really not much to go on. It's just that we see Vernestra finally goes to him to, I guess, inform him of what has been happening, which is also interesting, just to note that, like, what he didn't know about it at all. I don't know if you have certain theories about it. But also, we do get, excuse me, a 30-second shot of Darth Plagueis, and you did bring the novel here.
The novel is on full display right here.
And we get the reveal of him, though it's a shadowy figure, and it's in a cave. He looks great. He looks fantastic. I wonder if $170 million went to the digital effects used for Plagueis. But what was your takeaway from when you did see Plagueis? Were you upset that we didn't see him again in the episode? I'm sure you weren't surprised that we didn't see him again, but were you upset that we didn't get a little bit more with him? And playing hypothetical, which I think we both agree, and most people would, that this is not going to get a season two.
Right.
But if it did,
yeah.
Do you have any theories or predictions where they could go? I know I think just started this book. You haven't finished it yet, right?
I started it a couple years ago. I got like 12 or 15 chapters in. I didn't end up finishing it, but I'm definitely going to dive back in. I would say with Plagueis, the initial thought process was, of course, you know, Easter egg route, you know, get fans to say, ooh, Plagueis, now we need a season two. So that, you know, again, as we've talked about this season with the manipulative tactics of Disney with this season, I thought he looked great. He really cool looking. I would like to see more of him. Unfortunately, the only way I could do that is to see him in the Acolyte, unless they make a bold decision and say, we're going to do another season of a show that's in the same time period, but it's not connected to the Acolyte. We're just looking at Plagueis and Sidious and maybe that I would be, I'd be okay with. Yoda, I didn't love that it implies that Vernestra now tells Yoda all of these cover-ups, and seemingly he goes along with it as well. I mean, we don't know. It ends on a hard cut. We don't see what his reaction is. We can only go off what we see in the prequels, and he doesn't seem to bring up the fact that there was a Sith cover-up at the time when Ki-Adi-Mundi is talking about it. So that just says to me that he knows and he's hiding it, which I don't think is very genuine to Yoda's character. I think it's very detrimental to his character, because his character flaw was never that he was corrupted or that he was someone that plotted to make the Jedi look good. His flaw was that he didn't recognize the darkness in front of him because he was so worried about doing the right thing for the Republic, and he ended up leading the Jedi into being part of the war instead of following the will of the Force, and his whole vision was clouded. That's why he messed up in the prequels, not because he was this corrupt Jedi that has been covering things up for centuries. I just think that's a very terrible look at Yoda and very bad
optics.
Bad optics, and I just don't think Leslie Headlin has that power to take that away from a character like Yoda, and I don't think she's added anything of value with this series, with Yoda in particular. But again, benefit of the doubt, which this show doesn't deserve. Maybe she doesn't tell him the full story. I don't know. But then it's just another cover.
Of course.
Which is just cover. Well,
I'm definitely more curious on the Yoda part of it because, and I don't know if it's also because it's just timely. We just did our review as of the recording. We did a review yesterday for the first part of season 6 of Cobra Kai. I don't know if you ever watched it.
I have not.
Anything Karate Kid you ever watched?
No.
Okay.
No.
So Mr. Miyagi.
Got that.
is a Yoda-esque figure within the Karate Kid universe. And in this, spoiler alert for people, if you haven't watched Cobra Kai, you've been warned. In this season, they have this, they uncover this box of secrets, essentially, that point to Miyagi having a little bit of a darker past than originally intended.
Sure.
And it's a unique approach, but at the same time, it's taking away from the mystique of the fact that like Miyagi was always this just unbelievably genuine, great old man that just was like magical, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Yoda does represent a lot of that.
Yeah.
And Miyagi is probably based a lot in maybe what
for sure.
Yoda was.
Right.
So I'm curious on what direction they would go. And the thing that bothers me and upsets me, which similar to you too, and you're talking about the benefit of the doubt, I don't trust Leslie Headland's writing to give us an answer that might be intriguing or interesting enough that we could see something that we can believe and rely on in terms of Yoda's lineage and his overall character arc through all the things that we see play out through the sequel trilogy and the prequel trilogy and all that stuff. Like it just wouldn't sit right.
Yeah.
So I think that I'm so curious because they have to, Disney obviously has to see. I mean, the show has a,
is it like a 4.5 on IMDb?
That's what I'm looking. It's a 3.9. Wow. Just a very low score for the people. If you don't follow IMDb, that's
impressive.
Unbelievably low for a show of this caliber. And the only other show I feel like I've seen that has low of a score was the Resident Evil show on Netflix. I feel like that also got torn apart.
What did Rings of Power season 1 get?
Probably like Not that.
Maybe like a 5.5.
Yeah, let's see.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Because I'm curious.
Premiere television, it's extremely low.
6.9.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's
way back.
Way higher than what they have for The Acolyte. The highest rated episode for The Acolyte is episode 5, which is a 6.5. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Probably the best. That was the one I really liked. Wasn't it?
No, you said like the week
was
after.
Was it 6?
No, 5 was the big fight in the middle of the night. You said the week after, you're like, oh, I kind of like this episode.
That's tough. That's a tough look for me. That's a 5. There's obviously a lot to talk about with this show. And it's not necessarily good. But there's a lot of intriguing questions. And I know before we started recording, you were like, we could talk about the future of Star Wars. And we always love speculating.
Yeah.
But they're in a very interesting period now because even certain shows, like there are Obi-Wan stans, right? There are people that still really enjoy Obi-Wan for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
They might not agree with certain decisions that were made, but the character is still great. The stuff with Anakin and Obi is fantastic in the show, or Vader and Obi is great in the show. And Ahsoka even, like we covered that whole entire first season here on the channel. And there was certain episodes that we really, really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially when we get the where I forget what it's called again.
Oh.
Where she sees Anakin.
Oh, yes.
You know what it's called?
Wow. Why am I blanking on this? The World Between Worlds, yeah.
World Between Worlds.
Yeah.
It's such an incredible episode and an awesome visual and great storytelling. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Filoni for that. But like, this show took it to a whole different place that I wasn't expecting or anticipating. And now they're kind of in really, really deep shit. They're going to be, their next movie comes out in 2026.
Just started filming.
Which is going to be removed. Let me see. Rise of Skywalker was 2017?
2019.
Okay. So we're going to be 7 years removed from the next or the last Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
We now have kind of a string of either underwhelming shows or shows that have just done very poor, with the exception of Mandalorian, which I'm repping,
except
and Andor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Book of Boba Fett wasn't highly rated. Obi-Wan was a huge disappointment for people. Ahsoka really dropped the ball at the end, which is always, I mean, that's always the worst thing, right? Because it leaves such a bad taste in fans' mouths.
Yep.
And then we get The Acolyte.
And season three of Mando.
So they're on a bad streak.
They are on a bad streak.
You are the biggest Star Wars fan I know personally.
Mm.
Pitch me on how they fix this.
Oh, God. I think they need to reevaluate Disney Plus and the viability of live action shows on Disney Plus. I think the money that they're spending on these shows could be much better used on developing movies. I think Star Wars at the end of the day is at its best when it's in the movie theater. I think they've done more damage than they realized with Disney Plus because they pivoted because Solo and Rise of Skywalker didn't do good.
Mm-hmm.
Last Jedi,
Rise of Skywalker still made a lot of money though,
but not a lot, like not enough for Star Wars. Like, I believe
it made over a billion, didn't it?
No, it didn't.
It didn't?
Last Jedi made a billion. Solo made like 320. And I think Rise of Skywalker maybe made 500.
Let's see.
Maybe six.
No, it made... Well, okay. So the budget was... This is crazy. The budget was $416 million.
Insane.
Our producer, Vinny, just audibly had a reaction to that, which I agree with. So then you add in, let's just, for the sake of, I don't know all the optics marketing of business, stuff, but let's just say there's an additional 150 onto that. So you're talking $566 million, and it made $1.077 billion. So it did make money, but it definitely didn't
perform.
Didn't perform as well as it should have. So if you're looking at that, for it to break, I mean, it probably made about $425 million, give or take, in terms of a profit. Okay. But for Star Wars, that's really not great.
No, especially for the end of the Skywalker saga that they extended for a reason to get more money out of the Skywalker saga.
So last film with Leia.
So they had Solo and Rise of Skywalker, which for Star Wars standards did not live up to the heights that they should have.
Mm-hmm.
So then they panicked and they said, and they received a lot of criticism because those movies weren't great. And The Last Jedi was very divisive. So they were like, okay, we got to pull back from the movies. We're scared. We're going to do too much damage. So then they go into TV. Mando kills it. Cultural phenomenon. Star Wars is back. Then they're like, oh, we're pretty good at this TV stuff. Let's greenlight all of these TV shows and put movies on the back burner. And then they flooded the market with TV shows that were either really great, like Mando, or they were really bad, like Book of Boba Fett or Obi-Wan, and they underperform. And then they just went on this streak of, we're just going to focus solely on TV. And then I think over time, people have just realized that these shows don't feel like the movies. The scale on them feels smaller. Andor, I think, made the scale feel bigger, but it's still a pretty small story on the galactic scale. Mando, again, was a small story. They're trying to make it bigger, but I think it proves in season three that the bigger story didn't feel like Mando. It didn't feel as good. And so I think they're just in a position now where they have to realize, like, maybe it's time to get back to your roots. And I totally understand that the movies are bigger risks. Like, if they mess up the Mando and Grogu movie or the Rey movie, like, that's going to be super detrimental. But I think what they've done with TV has been just as detrimental, because I think all of these casual Star Wars fans are like, I'm not interested in Star Wars because the last four shows I've seen are not good. So I have no confidence in Disney.
It also might not bring them back to the theaters if there's so much hesitancy in terms of the storytelling that Star Wars is doing.
Right.
So like, they're probably in a worse position now than they were previously. I will argue not for any particular side, but this is not necessarily a Star Wars problem. This is very much a Disney problem. Like,
fair.
Marvel has done something very similar in their formatting. And it's ironic because I know you're such a big animation fan, as is our producer Vinny today, but like, X-Men 97 was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first real big swing that Marvel did in animation, and it did really well. It's probably their highest rated Disney Plus show, maybe with the exception of WandaVision, which again, it is ironic that WandaVision and The Mandalorian were the first two shows from both of these banners when they had a much different mindset going into the streaming wars, so to speak. When COVID happened, a lot of change happened with the markets. And I do think it is kind of crazy looking back and being like, okay, so Mando came out in, same thing, right? Like 2019, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in the same amount of time, we've had three seasons of Mando, Book of Boba Fett, Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, Andor, and Acolyte. So we've had 8 seasons of Star Wars television.
Live action, yeah.
Live action television before we've gotten another movie, mm-hmm. which is crazy to think about. It's unbelievable. And the thing is, like, it's hard to, and I don't want to sort of dovetail into a whole different conversation, but it's weird with the state of movies versus streaming too, because mm-hmm. some people don't want to spend the money, but Star Wars were the types of movies that were still doing well.
They would bring people to the theaters.
The same with like Top Gun Maverick, like that, it was massive because it was something that people hadn't seen. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot longer. That was over 30 years since we had seen mm-hmm. a Top Gun movie, but
yeah,
it's going to feel like that. Or it would have felt like that. If like, let's say they put out a movie in 2023,
mm-hmm.
it would have felt like, it's like, damn, it's been a really long time since I've seen Star Wars in the movie theater.
Yeah.
And what did you go and see in the movie theater? Didn't you go and see an episode of one of the shows in a theater?
I couldn't. There was those screenings. For Ahsoka, screenings, right? For Ahsoka and Acolyte. I couldn't make it to them.
Okay.
But they did have them.
And I know people loved it. I know people were talking about Ahsoka being in the theater too. So that might be something that they could pivot to. But they're in such a weird, dire state. And like I said, Disney, I feel like, is sort of in the same thing. Marvel is on a different trajectory right now because now they have Deadpool and Wolverine, which I think mm-hmm. is going to do really well for them.
Yeah.
Star Wars now has to rely on the back of their next show, live action show, which is going to be Skeleton Crew,
mm-hmm.
which we've jokingly talked about that it may or may not exist.
Yeah.
We did get more images. We did get promo art for it. Are you more or less excited? I mean, it's not the same creative team that did the Acolyte.
Yeah.
But I mean, as a Star Wars fan, you have to be like, I don't know how this is all going
to
go.
Right. I wasn't excited for it to start. I thought it was interesting. It was one of those shows I was just going to hope for the best, but my expectations were kind of low. Now, having seen the Acolyte, I'm even more nervous, which I'm always nervous with Star Wars live action TV nowadays, but I'm even more nervous because I don't want to take away from child actors. Like, there's some great child actors. Stranger Things was lightning in a bottle with a whole cast of child mm-hmm. actors. Like, they all were amazing in the show. When you have an entire show with child actors, there's a lot of risk. And I know Jude Law is attached, which is really cool. But, you know, seeing the child actors in The Acolyte, and then that's the talent that Disney's bringing in, it just makes me scared for what they're going to do with the Skeleton Crew. And if they're able to really bring us those childhood stories and that coming of age story in the Star Wars galaxy in a convincing way. I know Jonathan Watts is great. He did the Spider-Man movies. He does the coming of age genre very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope his fingerprints are all over this and it comes off in a very realistic way. And it's very, we can connect with these child actors easily, but for me, it's just, I don't know what to expect. And there's rumors that it connects to the Mandalorian and Ahsoka,
that whole world,
and it connects, and it's like, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? For me, of course, I'd rather them just tell a standalone story so it doesn't have to connect with everything, and you don't have to watch the show to get everything else that's going on. And especially with like a coming of age drama, it feels like that would be a perfect opportunity to not have it connect with everything, just focus on the kids in their part of the galaxy. So I'm in a holding pattern. I don't know. I assume D23. When's D23? We'll see a trailer. D23,
I believe, is in September.
Maybe late August.
I mean, Comic-Con is, but Star Wars doesn't really have much of a presence there.
I don't think. And when Celebration? Anything.
Or that we already missed that, right?
Tokyo. I think it's in 2025.
Okay.
It's not this year. So I mean, I think D23, we'll get a Skeleton Crew for sure, and then we might get an Andor season 2 first look.
I will say this, and this isn't much to go off of because it, irregardless, like I've talked about, we had talked about in previous episodes, like Koganada is a director that I've heard really great things about. He did mm-hmm. a couple episodes of the show and he couldn't save it necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So much of it is based on writing. John Watts did co-write the show with Christopher Ford. He also does direct an episode, which is probably the pilot.
Yeah,
but the list of directors for this show is terrific. Like, it reminds me of, I remember like that first season of Mandalorian, and then when they do Disney Gallery and they were talking about
mm-hmm.
all the fingerprints that were so, like, it was so cool because it felt like Star Wars, but you could tell that there were certain director quirks
yeah,
that
yeah.
were interworking with it. For the people that might not know this, John Watts is directing an episode. Lee Isaac Chung, who just did Twisters, which is doing really well, and he did Minari, he's doing an episode. The Daniels, who did Everything Everywhere All at Once, working in Star Wars, is definitely interesting to me. David Lowry, who is like a really unique A24 director. Jake Schreier, who's doing Thunderbolts for Marvel. Like, there's a lot there. And Bryce Dallas Howard, who's coming back, and she's done fantastic work across Star Wars since she's joined.
Is Rick
No, he's not. Okay. He's not on it. Jon Favreau and Filoni are also executive producers on this. So it's interesting. I have a little bit more faith in this than I did Acolyte.
Fair, yeah.
But I think all the criticisms or the not criticisms, but the speculation that you have is like, I get it. I totally understand where you're coming from. Returning back to this show.
Yeah, right. The Acolyte.
We haven't talked about the Acolyte for so
much. Right.
We get Soul's death.
Yeah. That's a great transition.
Which is a great transition.
So, Soul died.
Soul's dead.
Yes.
He was a character that we did enjoy for the most part in terms of the acting by Lee Jung-jae.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the more interesting characters this season. How did you feel about that whole sequence? I know some people were criticizing online the fact that Osha killed him with a force choke, and that was a whole thing because they were like, how did this happen? Like, it was just, again, very.
Lee Jung-jae just deserved a better Star Wars character. Or no, not a better character, a better show to be in, because he was great in this role and you could feel that he loved Star Wars and he gave this everything. He literally learned another language just to do this role. And it's such a shame that it's not in a better project, but I still think people appreciate his role and Master Soul and the ideas that they were trying to bring together here. Regarding the force choke thing, I think the big issue I had with that one is that I guess that was the weapon, like killing a Jedi without a weapon. That was it, which seems it was pretty obvious. I thought they were trying to go for a more meta or a more philosophical answer. Like, you can't kill a Jedi with a weapon. You can take down the Jedi Order through secrecy and sneaking around and political stuff like Sidious does. Like, Sidious didn't destroy the Jedi Order using force choke.
Yeah.
He destroyed the Jedi Order by being in the shadows and operating in the shadows. And I thought that's what they were going for. But then Kamir's like, oh my God, she killed him without a weapon. I was like, I think the force is a weapon.
It is so unique too, because so much, this is why I really wish we were going to get a tell all book about the show, but I know we're never going to. So much of what Leslie Headlin said in interviews based on what her influences were, don't match up to what the show was.
Mm.
And I think that's so interesting because it's like, she clearly knows her shit.
Right.
When it comes to Star Wars, she's a huge fan of the Legends novels, and there are actually a lot of odes throughout the series and Easter eggs to those novels that we really don't get a lot in Star Wars, at least in live action. I don't know if there's some things in animation, but we don't see a lot of that. But this show, again, just doesn't reflect, like you just talked about, like so much of what we were pitched, this show is just not that.
I think Leslie has a good understanding of things that have happened in Star Wars and lore in Star Wars, but fundamentally, like, what Star Wars is about and
the execution of it.
Yeah, and the themes that George was trying to say, I think she has little less grasp of, but because she knows all this other stuff, it seems like she knows Star Wars really well, and I don't want to take anything away from her. I just think that's the truth. I think what she's presented is contradictory to George's vision, even though she knows stuff like Cortosis or like everything else that she's brought in from Legends. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
But I think for me, Star Wars is always, it's more important to know what Star Wars is about than to be like, that ship is an E-class, blah, blah, blah. Like, those specific
the themes,
things.
The themes of Star Wars kind of get stripped away from the show.
Exactly.
And it makes it feel a lot more lackluster than other previous attempts.
What did you feel with Soul's death?
Well, I felt very similar. I mean, I really liked Lee Jung-jae in the show for what he had to work with. I agree. I would have loved to have seen him maybe have a different approach to it. I know, like, a lot of people don't like Book of Boba Fett, but I like Temuera's Morrison's when they dive into some different things with him, and I think he has a grasp on the character, and I would want to see more of Soul in a different context, and it sucks that we're not going to get that. I can't imagine, maybe an animation at some point if they decide to do something like
Tales of the Jedi, maybe,
that would be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that sucks about that too is, like, I'm not, it's weird to say because the performance is good, but I'm not as interested in the character because they presented the character in such a way where it was just like, the way this guy is handling all this is just piss poor.
Right. Yeah.
So that's another part of it.
Yeah.
The one depressing thing for me coming off of the series, just except for the show's whole, is that Manny Jacinto as Chimer, I absolutely loved. Like, loved his role as the character. And I'm interested to see if he could do more, but we're not going to see that. And I don't love that we may be leading, or they may lead into a romantic thing with Osha. That doesn't make much sense to me. Yeah. And I do think Amandala is a good actor, but I think that they were miscast as Osha and May, which is, I hate saying things like that, but it's like, I was so not interested in anything that had to do with Osha and May throughout the whole entire show. Yeah. And to play devil's advocate again, I think a lot of people that do love this show, it's because they are invested in that relationship. And I don't know if that was what Leslie was going for, and clearly it's worked for some people, but I think a lot of people saw through it, and a lot of people weren't as interested in what the core idea of what the show was supposed to be, was supposed to go through these two characters played by the same person, and neither performance really came off better than the other or even great.
And I think the writing, you have to fall back on, that is another thing that held them back. I think they could have done a really, really great job with this. It's an interesting idea, but I think the writing, these characters just flip-flopped so quickly, and there was no time to really sit in these moments and understand what they're going through or their thought process as to why May would flip sides. And then the next episode, after she said she wants to turn herself into the Jedi, the next episode she fights Jeki to not be turned in by the Jedi. Yeah. And then in the next episode she wants to kill Sol after just saying she wants to abandon the mission. Osha loves these people that she's around, the Jedi. Chimer kills all of them. Then because he says like two or three platitudes, she's like, oh, this guy's a philosopher. Oh, and I've seen him naked. I'm kind of interested in him now. It's like, it just, the characters are written where Amandala, they just have nowhere to go, unfortunately. And I agree, you know, there could be some talent things in there. I'm not that into that. Like, I love acting, obviously.
That's critical of it.
But
yeah,
I'm not an actor, so I can't point those out as much. There are those little moments she could have added to. I think it just falls back to the script. So it's just, it's very unfortunate. So yeah, Sol dies because he leaves off crucial information. He doesn't tell May or Osha like, hey, your mother was turning into this black monster and you were disappearing, so I wanted to stop her from making you disappear. Because if he said that, then it would be like, oh yeah, I guess I was disappearing. That was kind of scary. But they just leave, again, with the show, they leave these vague lines of dialogue to trick the audience to be like, oh yeah, Sol's the bad guy, Osha and May have been done wrong. But if he just pled his case instead of just being like, I'm sorry, I lied, there would have been more of an interaction, I think, and
Osha could have been more of a payoff.
Yeah.
I think that so much of it too is the crazy thing is, based on him not giving that information and them wanting to make him look like a bad guy, still you're so much more invested in his character that you understand why he did what he did.
right, exactly.
And so you're rooting for that character.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that is, I mean, I'm like just trying to think of, I'm just trying to be in Leslie Headland's head, which is not fair. But it's like, I wonder if like that was the side where she was like, oh, like, maybe, no, I'm not even going to get into it. It's stupid.
There was supposed to be some sort of flip with the audience where we were supposed to change from Sol to May and Osha, I think, in the middle of the season. Like, we were attached to Sol. The show, first of all, has a protagonist problem. It doesn't know who it wants to be the main character. And I think at one point they wanted the people to like both May or Osha and Sol. And at one point they wanted us to say,
flip.
Yeah.
We see the side of Chimer and May.
And we really like May, Osha, and understand Chimer. And Sol is really the antagonist of this whole series. But they did so much to make us understand Sol and not understand the other two because they flip-flop so much that he became the main point of the last episode. I speak for myself. When I was watching the last episode, I was rooting for Sol.
Yeah.
I wanted Sol to save everyone. I wanted Sol to come out on top. And I know some people might be like, oh, you went in with your preconceived notions of the Jedi. That's why you like Sol, not because of his actions, but because he's a Jedi. And I'm like, no. He was justified in what he did. And if you're saying lying is worse than Chimer killing people in cold blood and doing all this other stuff, like, I'm sorry, you're just, on like a high horse. Yes. Like, no.
You're a sociopath.
Yeah.
Is that what you are? No. I agree, because I agree with you. Like, I feel like if we would have seen something in which, I don't even know what I would have wanted in the finale, because we talked about this too. It was like, what could they do to like remedy? I don't think there would have been much, but I do think there could have been an interesting thing in which we saw maybe Osha and even if Osha and Chimere go off together and May gets brainwiped, I would have liked it for Soul One not to die, but maybe, like you said, kind of save the day in a sense and just like be okay with what the decision is, mm-hmm. and then be this loner. Like, right. go off and be like, again, like kind of how Obi-Wan became in the Obi-Wan series.
Right.
I think Lee Jung-jae would have done a really good job with kind of playing that. Mm-hmm. And maybe we see him later on. And if you decide to do something like that in between the prequels and the High Republic.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, man. There's not a lot to praise when it comes to this show.
Yeah.
And we haven't given any scores, obviously, all season. But it is time to officially give a score.
Oh, gosh.
Because we're at the finale.
Can you go first?
I can go first.
I don't usually give scores for anything.
I can go first, so yeah.
I would love to hear
That's
your
totally
score.
Fine. So I'll go first. Again, yes, on Mark's podcast, which you can plug at the end, but he does not give scores for episodes. You don't even give scores for like your full wrap ups, right?
I don't give scores.
All right, so this is my doing. So apologies in advance. There's not a lot of good to take away from the show.
Yeah,
genuinely, I really loved Manny Jacinto's character in this and his choices. I thought that the fight choreography was very consistent throughout, and there was really great fight choreography throughout. Awesome lightsaber fights. Mm-hmm. The main problem with the show, obviously, is so much of the structuring, the pacing, the themes, the writing. So much of what makes a show and a movie really great, mm-hmm. this show lacks in so many areas.
Yeah.
So having said that, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 10. All so right. That's where I'm at. It is a low score. It is, I think, tied with the lowest score I've ever given, which Vinny and I did a review for Rebel Moon Part 1.
A Star Wars clone. That's funny.
It is funny. It is a Star Wars clone. But yeah, unfortunately, this was not a show that really impacted me in any which way. The only thing that I want to see going forward is the things that we got in those 45 seconds, which it sucks.
You fell for it.
Yeah, like I don't want to see it so badly that I want to see season two of the show.
Yeah.
I would love for them to do something with Chimere, but now I don't even know how they get there. Like, maybe you do an animated show of how he got to where he was, but I don't really want to see much else from this world.
If you want to see Chimere, you got to see Osha, and you got like that. This story just has to continue. Unfortunately,
that sucks.
My score. Probably, yeah, like a 4, 4.5. That's where I would sit, because I think mid is too generous, because this is my least favorite Star Wars show, animation, live action.
Star Wars anything ever.
Probably. I mean, it's this and Rise of Skywalker are like fighting hand in hand. But I think even Rise of Skywalker has some Star Wars moments. I didn't really feel anything with the show when it came to Star Wars outside of...
It doesn't feel like Star Wars.
The lightsaber battles, the Force and what they explore with the Force just feels extremely shallow and watered down, so... and it sends the wrong message in the end. Like, in the end, Osha and Chimere are like framed as these heroes that have been like freed from the Jedi, and that they're doing well, or they're doing better now that they've joined the dark side, which is just anti-Star Wars, which I know it's about perspective, but you can't make them the heroes. You can't say this was actually a good thing. Like, it's a good thing that they killed all these Jedi. That's just, you can't do that. So crazy. That's why I'll give it a 4, 4.5. Sucks. And, do not let this shy you away from reading the High Republic books. The High Republic books are very Star Wars. Vernestra is much more interesting than the High Republic books, so I always advocate for checking those out. They're at least worth a read, even if you don't love them. They're worth a read, and you're not going to be like, oh, this isn't Star Wars. It's good.
Yeah, so they dropped the ball with the High Republic in live action and television or movies for the first time. First time we get them in a filmmaking medium. They didn't do a great job, but just want to give Mark an opportunity to plug his own Star Wars based podcast, and then we're going to sign off.
Yeah. So you can follow me at star_wars_mark of balance. I run the Star Wars Mark of Balance podcast, talking about Star Wars more in depth, more of the nitty gritty kind of themes and ethos of Star Wars. But also talk about writing and directing and stuff like that. Talk about movies, TV, video games, like hot topics in Star Wars books, obviously. So would love to have you over there. Casuals and diehards. Welcome. So thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mark is also covering House of the Dragon with us on the network, which we're super excited about. He'll be on next week's penultimate episode, as well as the finale with all of us to cover it. So we're really excited for that, and so happy that Mark has joined us in a bigger capacity here at the Culture Wave Media Network. But let us know in the comments what you guys thought about The Acolyte. We've gotten a lot of comments that agree with a lot of our takes, which I'm not very surprised with, that 3.9 on IMDb. But as I said, there is a vocal minority, and we'd love to hear your reasons on why you love the show. Is it based on the twin dynamic? Is it based on maybe certain characters that you related to a lot more, like Chimere or Sol? Vernestra, I know, was one that is beloved in the novels, but they didn't do as good of a job with her in this show, a lot of people say. So maybe you guys disagree with that. We'd love to have a conversation with you guys in the comments. And you could also give this video a like if you can and subscribe to us. We cover all things film and television. We're currently, like I said, covering House of the Dragon. We have a review upcoming for Deadpool and Wolverine next week, Twisters, other stuff. We just finished our coverage of The Boys. We just did our Cobra Kai episode, as I said earlier. So lots of stuff for you guys to check out. If you watch anything on any streaming service or in the movie theaters, we are most likely covering it. So be sure to check out all of our other stuff. And if you guys don't already, you can follow us on social media. We are at Cinema Wave Media and at underscore Culture Wave Media on Instagram, as well as at Cinema Wave Media on TikTok and Threads, and then just Culture Wave on Facebook. Just signing off, I am Darian Scalamoni.
I'm Mark Iacobino.
And we'll see you guys next time.
This is The Culture.